You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining with me on another Prospect Minute is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
Good, and I know the listeners didn't just hear this, but as you did, as you can tell, I'm at my mom's house today because, you know, I had to stop by and visit with somebody and let the dog out. She's gone. They're gone. My parents are gone all weekend, so I'm kind of watching over the house and my sister told me the tacos are done, so.
Well, that is good. Make sure she throws me some. I love myself some tacos.
Yeah, but good thing that didn't happen about 5 minutes ago, or else we'd be restarting this thing. So.
Well, let's jump into another system, talking about the Seattle Mariners today. Before we do, though, we can reach Matt on Twitter, at MDTopFWFB. You can reach me on Twitter, at JustinMasonFWFB. Let's talk about the Mariners system. It is a system that's got some guys who are, I think, coming a little bit. So who are guys that are close to the majors?
Well, I think everybody loves Tyler O'Neill, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of burst on the scene last year, threw some big power numbers up there. He's a corner outfielder, and he's not really a good defensive outfielder, so I don't really know. I don't anticipate seeing him getting meaningful at-bats this year. I bet you they leave him in AAA the whole season. But last year in AA, 24 homers, 26 doubles, 4 triples, stole 12 bags, hit .293. He's a solid corner outfielder, like I said. I think he comps favorably to someone like Jay Bruce. I don't think the batting average is ever going to be that strong at the major league level. I could see 250, 260, but I could see him hitting 30 home runs. He's that big, that strong. Comes from a family of weightlifters in Canada. And so he's a Canadian guy with big biceps. So it's probably lifting trees and logs and stuff, I'd imagine, in the off season. But he's a little bit shorter. If he's short righty for a hitter, he profiles similarly, like appearance wise, not like facial appearance wise, but like body wise. He's a bigger version of Clint Frazier, who's also kind of a short little righty hitter, and who's also big in his own right. But Tyler O'Neill's interesting. But like I said, I don't think he comes up this year. But he'll be in the upper levels of the minors. And if he does come up this year, it'll be a September push. Or because Seattle's riddled by injuries. And I'm not sure he's ready yet because he does strike out quite a bit, 150 strikeouts and 492 at-bats. But he walks a healthy amount in the minor leagues. We'll see if that translates. He's not going to play center field, like I said. He's a slightly below average runner, but he's a smart runner. So he can probably chip in double-digit steals with 25, 30 home runs. But I don't think he hits 25, 30 homers now. But I think that's like 2 or 3 years down the road. I think 25-30 is a realistic number for him. But I bet you if he was to come up in the majors now, I think he would hit about 15-20 and hit for a low average. I think next year he's a reasonable option to win Rookie of the Year in 2018. I think he's that type of player. But Yeah, he's an interesting bat in Seattle. I wish he was in a different ballpark, but everyone loves their Canadian sluggers, right?
No, I do. Yeah. Who else we got that's close to the major league level?
Well, we can talk about the one and only Dan Vogelbach. Or Mitch Haniger, but I know you love both, so we'll go Vogelbach first. Vogelbach is an extremely, extremely interesting guy to me. Appearance-wise, you have a lefty masher, unathletic, I'll say chubby, to be nice. First base only in the sense that he is not athletic enough to play any other spot. He's a really bad first baseman, to be honest. He's probably DH only. But he's really interesting to me because you either like Dan Vogelbach or you don't. There is absolutely no in between here because he's a big guy and he's a big first baseman with that frame. He's going to sit against lefties. He's a 20 runner. He's a 20 defender. His arm's below average. The only skill he has, he's got average power, I would say, which is kind of disappointing for the first base position, but he has a plus hit tool. I compare him offensively to like a Matt Adams with a better hit tool, meaning like he is going to be a guy, if you're drafting him for 25 to 30 homers, you're going to be disappointed. I don't think he ever does that. He's more of a line drive hitter trapped in a fat man's body, as in like he's not going to put up the big numbers, you know, that he looks like he would. You know what I mean? If someone's amateur watching just baseball, like, oh, he's going to hit a lot of home runs. Well, not really. But what he is going to do is he's going to post really, really strong batting averages, I think. Maybe not initially, but the problem with him is he kind of needs to do it out of the gate because that's the only skill he's going to really offer. Because, like I said, the average power at first isn't that special, right? Like,
no, it's not special at all.
You're looking at a guy, I think, in his peak years in the majors is going to push 280, 290 batting average. The OBP is going to be outstanding. He's going to be pushing every bit of 370, 380 OBPs, I think, in his prime at the lowest. His walk rate is always great. He has a really mature and advanced idea of the strike zone as a hitter. But again, like, it's all going to question the batting average. And obviously, another thing that's going to limit the ceiling, it's going to help the batting average, but it's going to limit the ceiling, is he's probably a platoon option. So as it looks like right now, assuming the Mariners don't sign anybody, which we kind of think we both kind of agree is unlikely, we think, but assuming they don't, you're looking at the first base, probably first base DH spot rotates. Looks like a Vogelbach and Danny Valencia platoon, which I think can be productive,
mm-hmm.
But, he's a guy that like you said, he has to sit against lefty. So that's going to limit the power ceiling as it is. So you're already chopping 150 at-bats off the 550 total that all regulars get, right? So you're sitting at 400 at-bats. He's not going to hit 30 home runs, especially now with only 400 at-bats. I think expecting 18 to 20 is about right for me, maybe up to 22, 23 if, you know, wherever he gets a little lucky sometimes or whatever. But I think that's a very productive player, but it's not the highest ceiling. And I think I did my initial rankings, I kind of lumped him with the first baseman because I don't know where else to put him. I don't think he's a first baseman, but it's the only spot he really can play in the field anyways. So I kind of lumped him. I redid my first base rankings last night, actually, and I keep finding him in the 22 to 25 range, which in a 12-team league means he's not draftable because he's going to be a corner infield position or utility guy. And the deep third base group kind of saturates the corner infield spot. I don't know if you agree with that.
I think he's
a corner outfield corner infield option or utility guy in 15 team or larger leagues.
Yeah, AL only.
Yeah, or AL only, yes. But I do think that's fine. I think he's going to be a really productive player, but there's no in between. Like I said, you either like the hit tool or you don't. And if you don't like the hit tool, you think he's garbage. You know what I mean?
The hard part with Vogelbach, especially for like this year, because I do think at some point maybe they work with him on launch angle. Because he's got power in his bat. Like, you know, I mean, you know, I understand, like, you know, he hasn't been launching home runs at the rate that I think people thought he would considering his size. But yeah. I think he's got more power in his bat. I think they need to work on him, work on kind of, you know, maybe tweaking his swing a little bit to give him a better launch angle.
if that is real too. Launch angle is a really real thing. Yeah. I mean, like,
I know we joke about and talk about a lot about the juice balls and things like that, and I think there's something to that. But I also think, you know, part of the rise in home runs and in offensive production is the data that teams are getting now is better. And so they can pinpoint, hey, these guys, you need to put a little bit more loft in your swing, or you need to, you know, cut down your swing a little bit.
Matt Carpenter did the launch angle thing, and now look at him. He's a 30-homer bat, potentially, if you say, you know. So it's not to keep using that as an example, but –
No, but it's a good example.
He changed his launch angle specifically. That was a goal of his in the offseason, and it has paid off.
I think Vogelbach is Adam Dunlight. So
I have the power though. He's not hitting. Vogelbach will never hit 40 home runs ever.
No, but that's what I mean. Light. I mean, I think there will be a 25 to 30 home run season in there. I doubt it's this year. I think for this year, he is AL-only reserve kind of pick. And the problem with a guy like Vogelbach is if he does platoon with Valencia, you can't really afford to have him on your team in deeper formats because you need those at-bats, the currency we always talk about.
He will get the strong side of the platoon. I mean, he is a left-handed hitter.
I mean.
Yeah. No, bats are currency. We say that a lot because it's a free thing. But, I can't argue with anything you're saying. I do think if you're in OBP formats, this is a different story. I think
just like Adam Dunn. Adam Dunn was much more useful player in OBP formats.
I think in OBP formats, he becomes rosterable at the back end of your roster and even 12-team formats just because it's going to be so strong. You just worry about how it translates as a rookie because you know how that's unpredictable being a rookie. But if you look at his minor league stat line, 286, 391 OBP, that's kind of exactly where I have him pegged to be a major league hitter when he fully develops. And I mean, it's going to be hard to say. It's going to be, hopefully the Mariners are patient and give them time because I think it'll pay off. But again, you know, they're in a weird spot.
Yeah. Let's move on to somebody else. Haniger.
It's Haniger. Yes. Your boy. Do you want to? I feel like I should let you lead this one off. I mean, I know your love for him, but
I mean, I don't necessarily have that much love for him.
No, I thought you did.
No,
you must be thinking of somebody else. Okay.
No, I was rooting for Ben Gamble before that trade.
Definitely, I still like Ben Gamble. We'll get to him too in a minute. I like Haniger. He was a guy I kind of wrote off years ago when he was bouncing between the Brewers and the Diamondbacks system, and then the Diamondbacks outfield situation was a mess a couple years ago. You know, they brought in Tomas, had David Peralta, Pollock, and you didn't see a really route to playing time. And Haniger wasn't the hitter he is now. He started to break out a little bit toward the second half of 2015. It carried over into 2016 in a big way. It's been much publicized. He's worked with the hitting guru, the name escapes me, that's worked with Josh Donaldson before.
Mm-hmm.
So now Haniger finds himself incorporating more of a leg kick. And it's paid off. You look at the minor league stat line between AA and AAA, 321, 419, 581. That's a 999 OPS for those keeping track at home, with 34 doubles, 5 triples, 25 homers, and 12 steals. I think that'll play. And it looks like right now the Mariners are dead set on giving him a shot in right field, and I think that's the right move. You know, the Gene Segura deal – we even call it the Gene Segura trade because he got the most of the publicity, the Taiwan Walker trade. I think Haniger is the key to that deal because if Haniger turns out to be the new hitter that I think he is, I think the Mariners win that deal in a landslide because I'm not a big Taiwan Walker guy anyways.
No, and I think Taiwan Walker going to Arizona in that park is
– and Gene Segura is productive anyways too, you know.
Yeah.
So,
I'm a huge Gene Segura guy.
Yeah. So I think Haniger is – He's the key to that trade 100%, and I think he can tip the scales in a big way for Jerry Dipoto and the Mariners. And I really like Haniger, and he is going insanely cheap in drafts for a guy
that's got
playing time.
Yeah, so. I love the trade value and the situation. You know, I haven't seen enough of Haniger play to really say, okay, this is a guy I love or a guy, guy, but I can buy into the value. Because the value is absolutely dirt cheap. He's going to be, you know, say what you want about Seattle.
Yep.
That is going to be a good lineup.
It is.
You know? You've got Dyson and Segura leading off, who are going to be running around the base paths. Then Cano is still a stud. Cruz is still a stud. Seager is still a stud. I mean, I know Roster Resource has Zunino as the number six batter.
I think Zunino's fine in that spot in the order. Just hit home runs, man.
Yeah. I mean, but I could easily see him get flip-flopped for Haniger.
Yeah, me too. I think Haniger is a better bet to hit in front of a guy like that. I agree.
Mm-hmm. So
Haniger's, he's a 97th outfielder off the board right now. 423.74 in NFBC. So
I'll take that all day long. That is absolutely insane.
The outfielders going around him right now: Roman Quinn, who I like, Charlie Tilson, Aaron Altair, Gerardo Parra, and Lewis Brinson, who should not be drafted in redraft. Yeah. So,
well, I mean, in Altair and Quinn, they lose one of those values two. because of the Michael Saunders signing. Gerardo Parra is nothing at this point. I mean, going in the FSL Garcia range, in the Hyunsu Kim range, the Alex Dickerson range, I'll take Haniger all day long down there.
Yeah, sign me up for that. And, I mean, between him and Vogelbach, and I'm going to look up Vogelbach right now too, there's some potential diamonds here. Vogelbach is going 428.5 ADP, 29th first baseman off the board behind Jeffrey Marte and Joe Mauer. I'll take Vogelbach over Mauer.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan Zimmerman, I'll take Vogelbach over Zimmerman, I think, too. So
I
really like the values for both of these young guys. And it's very rare to have a team that – I like Seattle's lineup a lot. I mean, we talked about this, and it's a very good lineup, and they have two really good young guys that are going to step in and play, and they're both really underhyped, I feel like.
I think I don't understand. It's always weird to me how the industry works in terms of hyping young guys. Because, you see certain guys, and like, don't get me wrong, David Dahl showed a lot coming up. And so did Benintendi. But these are two guys that you have to pay top 120 draft prices on. Whereas a guy like Haniger, you're not getting in the top, you don't have to pay a top 300 price tag.
If you're a betting man and you had to decide who puts up, forget ADP, forget draft value, which I know is impossible, but just for the sake of this argument, who you go out next year for more home runs, RBIs, and runs and steals? Mitch Haniger, Andrew Benintendi.
I'm gonna take RBIs and home runs on Haniger, runs and stolen bases on Benintendi.
And batting average is gonna be tight between both of them, I think. But then
bake into the fact that there's almost a 300 pick difference between the two.
It is unreal to me. I'm right there with you, and the fact that we're even like. People are probably like, what? You didn't say it. Obviously, long term, I like
Benintendi. Yeah, long term, it's obviously Benintendi, but.
But, like, short term, and even 2018, it might be Haniger.
And even if it's not, you factor in the draft value, it's obviously Haniger.
Yeah, no, it's. And I think that's something people need to be aware of.
Benintendi going 136 right now on NFBC. League's 32nd outfielder off the board. And like you said, Haniger going 97th, 423rd. I mean, for instance, if, I said that Benintendi is 136, I'm just going to go to second base and look at around 136. You skip out on going for Benintendi. You just pencil in Haniger later. And then you look at 136. You've got Jose Peraza, Dustin Pedroia, Ben Zobris, Jonathan Scope, all going later than that.
Yeah.
What second baseman are you going to get at 420 that is going to sniff any playing time? That's where you want to take Whit Merrifield and Scooter Jeanette? against people who are like, outfield is so shallow this year. Like, no, it's not.
It's just filled with players that everyone have flaws. It's not shallow. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? It's filled with guys that you may not like a lot, but are going to play. But
yeah,
that's absolutely right. And I think that's something you need to be aware of going into drafts. I mean, that's insane value to me. So,
all right, let's move on to someone else. Anybody else close to the majors?
I'm scanning it right now. I don't believe so. I mean, I take that back. Dan Altavilla, probably not a household name.
Relief guy.
He's a relief pitcher, yes, but he throws upper 90s, scrapes 100 with a killer slider. In deeper save and hold, deeper hold formats, I think he's a really nice guy. He had a really nice debut last year in the majors, 12 innings, 10 strikeouts to one walk. He pitched himself to a 1.9 ERA in double A last year over a strikeout per inning. Didn't walk that many guys, limited hits. Obviously, being where he is, it's not a high ceiling for fantasy, but I do think, God forbid, something goes wrong with Edwin Diaz.
Mm-hmm.
I think Altavilla would ultimately be the guy that secures a long-term role if needed.
Mm-hmm. So
I don't like C-Sheck. I know he's hurt too. I think
they still have Zick coming back at some point, right?
Yeah, I guess it's going to be a
Nick pile Vincent
of,
who's
pile
close
of arms
before.
Like that.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing that that's who they'd go with. I mean, Scribner, who has been an interesting name. I see what you're saying, and you want to draft skills, not roles. Mm-hmm. But I think it would need to turn into like an Angels type bullpen circus or a Reds type bullpen circus for him to get the shot.
And you know,
which
things
it
are,
could because it's it not could, necessarily yeah. as strong. I mean, outside of Diaz is super strong, but outside of that, there's not much to really love in this bullpen.
Yeah, worst case scenario, he's a nasty 7th, 8th inning guy in Holds League who's going to carry value. So
I think Holds Leagues is a great spot, especially, you know, like our friends of Fantasy Benefits Dynasty League, where we have
yep.
Holds, you know, 20-man league, I think 35 or 40-man rosters. He should get drafted in that league, and unless you or I or someone listening to this podcast takes him, I doubt he does.
I guess another guy, if you want to make a little smooth transition, that's going to play in Seattle this year, probably, unfortunately, in a fourth outfielder role, it's our boy Ben Gamel. We kind of hinted at it. I think he's the perfect fourth outfielder, and I think in AL-only league he's going to carry value because the speed,
mm-hmm.
Because the high contact approach, decent walk rate. The power is modest, but I think the thing that hurts him is the Jared Dyson acquisition.
Yeah,
but Dyson's only there for a year. He's a free agent next year, so who knows what's going to go on with that. And Ben Gamel could do worse than put Ben Gamel out there. I mean, the Houston start Nori Aoki, you know what I mean, in left field. So there's Seattle had Aoki last year, I believe. So there's plenty of – Ben Gamel can be useful. Really strong season in the back-to-back strong seasons in AAA. I believe
Who knows what Haniger does.
Yep, he's insurance.
You know,
yep.
Dyson has never had a full-time role in his life. You know, Nelson Cruz doesn't have the, you know, picture of health. Leonis Martin can be hit or miss. So, I mean, Gamble's a guy like, you know, I'm going to do an NFBC draft and hold league here very soon. I'm going to sign up and start doing that. And Gamble's a guy that I will try to pair with Mitch Haniger late because, you know, 50-man rosters. You know, you're gonna roster a ton of reserve guys, you know, and I figure between the two of them, I'm going to get one good player.
Yeah, that's what you should be trying to do in leagues that deep, right? I mean, anytime you get a good player like that, regardless of how you get them, you know, if you got to platoon them or watch the daily lineups, he could be a useful piece. But I guess, I mean, the upside isn't as great as the other guys we talked about, but don't forget about the name, Ben Gamel. He did win the MVP in AAA for 2015. It was a 300, 358, 472 line. So he can hit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to know. I guess now we can talk about the big gun, huh? Mr. Kyle Lewis.
What are your thoughts on Kyle Lewis? Because I was not necessarily his biggest fan. I mean, I like him. I just... You know, I'm more of a Rutherford guy out of that, you know. And I, with the injury now, I'm completely off of him.
You shouldn't be. This injury has nothing to do with his long-term variance. As a matter of fact, I think in a weird way, it helps him because it might push him off center and let him focus on the bat more. But, I mean, obviously it doesn't help him because you don't want to have the knee injury, but I think they might put him in a corner and ease him back in, you know what I mean? And it gets more pressure on the bat. And you know, Rich Wilson of Prospect 361 does really good stuff, and he comped him to Jock Peterson.
Mm.
I don't really – I mean, I respect Rich. I like the comp, but I think a better comp is Jermaine Dye for me, the type of player, what you're going to get here with Lewis. corner outfielder, I think, in the long term. Mariners think he can play center. He's more likely to play center than Tyler O'Neill. But he's only 21. He just turned 21 in July. So even despite the knee injury, I'm not giving up on him. He's relatively young for a college hitter. Tore it up, won the College Player of the Year award at Mercer. The OPS numbers in college were cartoonish. 1,100 OPS for his career, including a 1,200 OPS last year with 20 homers. Jesus. I don't care what league you're playing in.
Yeah.
I don't care what league you're in. If you dominate it like that, he hit the ground like his first thing in pro ball, man, he hit right away. 30 games, 299 with 3 homers and 3 steals. That shows you the skills. It doesn't take long for strikeout rate and walk rate to stabilize. I know he didn't have enough bats for them to do that. Only had 117 at-bats. But they were 12% and 16%. 12% for the walk rate, 16% for the strikeout rate. Those are very good.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see him against a higher level, and unfortunately we don't get to see that chance. I thought he could have been a guy that would have got to the major leagues relatively fast because, you know, of the advanced college pedigree. But I think this is going to slow that way down. This knee injury for me adds at least a whole year to my original 2018 timetable. I think it's now 2019, maybe even 2020. But I still love the bat. I think it's my second pick after Nick Senzel in Keeper Dynasty
That's
format.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Unless you are in a really, really committed, deep rebuild, and then I go Kevin Maitán over Lewis. But so it's one of those two for the second spot. You know what I mean? So
I mean, I don't think I would do that. You know, like I keep saying, I'm a Rutherford guy.
Sure, that's fine. Nothing wrong with Blake Rutherford. We talked about him earlier. Yeah. So.
But I can understand why you would. And for instance, like I'm in a dynasty league. Draft starts on Thursday. You know, pretty much I think right when this podcast is coming out, the draft will have started. I've got the number 6 pick in that supplemental draft.
Yeah, you're not going to get Lewis.
Yeah. And I'm hoping not to, because like I said, if I don't get Lewis, that means that I, you know. I don't think I'm getting Senzel. I don't think I'm getting Lewis. I don't think I'm getting Maitán. Nope. So,
bad news for you though. Rutherford's gone 5 in 2 drafts I've done.
So. Yeah, that's brutal.
You can take Delvin Perez at 6 if you want to play the long game, but that's a different issue. The thing with Kyle Lewis though, like I said, I'm really high on the talent. There's a lot of action in the swing. It's loose body, everything, a lot of movement. But he's got all the tools, the raw power's there, the speed's there. The arm is there. I mean, I've seen, like I said, I saw Adam Jones comp on him. I've seen Jermaine Dye. Basically, what that says to me is 260 batting average and 25 home runs. That'll play. That's a top 3-round draft pick at his peak. So don't sleep on Kyle Lewis. He's a top – I think he has the ceiling to be a top 25 outfielder. So that's good.
Yeah. Anybody else that's close to him or that is a little bit farther away but has some upside?
Well, this organization, man, it's I was excited to talk with Luis Gohara, but obviously he's not in Seattle anymore. He took a big step forward in the Midwest League. He throws really hard from the left side, so I like him automatically. Teenage kid from Brazil, so it's an interesting backstory. Got traded to the Braves. He's buried in the Braves system, which is insanely deep, but he would have been probably the 4th or 5th guy on this list.
Mm-hmm.
I want to touch on him briefly like we just did because we didn't get to talk. It was after the Braves thing was done. But, I mean, I think he's a mid-rotation arm, extremely volatile, throws hard. But I guess the top pitching prospect now in this organization is Nick Neidert. Nick Neidert. I don't know how to pronounce that. So I apologize for any Neiderts at home. He's a guy for me. It's a sinker-slider profile, sinker-slider changeup. He's a mid-rotation arm, and he's your top pitching prospect. So it's not the most exciting thing to deal with. He also throws a curveball, fastball, slider, curveball, changeup. The command is a little bit above average. He's probably not till 2019, so it's going to be a little bit. But I think he's a safe guy. He's not going to get a lot of strikeouts, but he'll keep your ratios down. Drew Jackson is a middle infielder that he stole a crazy amount of bases last year. I want to pull up the sheet so I make sure I get the right total. He didn't repeat. Short story. He was a college draftee out of Stanford in the 5th round, 2015. In 2015, in 59 games, he stole 47 bases. Mm-hmm. Last year in the Cal League, which is obviously more power-oriented, so maybe teams don't run as much, he only stole 16. Batting average was a full 100 points less than it was the previous year. I think he's a utility ceiling. We've covered, if you haven't realized already, we've covered all the impact players in this system. We're kind of dealing with mid-tier guys now. But I think it's my duty. I'll give you one really nice sleeper that's getting no publicity right now. And that's Joe Rizzo. He's a first baseman, third baseman, corner infield guy.
He was a second-round pick, right?
Yes.
I took him in a deep dynasty league last year, I think.
He's got one standout tool, but lucky for him, it's the one tool you want. It's the hit tool.
Mm-hmm.
He's athletic enough where I want the Mariners to whatever their organizational needs are, obviously, but there's talk pre-draft that he could even be a guy that gets a late conversion to second base or even catcher. Just because, you know, he doesn't have the – I think he's got the plus power upside, but I see him as more of a line drive guy. So he's not going to post the monster home run totals like you would want from a corner infield guy. So I think he's a sleeper to watch. He's a little bit shorter. He's a left-handed hitter. One of my favorite draft websites, baseballdraftreport.com, comped him to John Kruk. And I think that's
interesting. Yeah.
John Kruk, if you don't know, was a plus hit tool guy. First
an
base
awful announcer.
Awful announcer. Didn't hit for a lot of power. And once again, I can't stress this enough, he was an awful announcer. but I think Rizzo's power numbers are capped at about 15 a year, which is fine. But it's more valuable as a catcher or a second baseman, so mm-hmm. I hope they do that. But he's a nice guy to pay attention to. DJ Peterson's a guy that's going to be up this year. He's a bench bat. He used to be a top 50 prospect. Now he's probably a top 450 prospect.
Yeah.
He's dropped considerably. Max Pose, P-O-V-S-E. Max Pose.
You're on that one.
Yeah, I'm asking the wrong person. He's a big 6'8 righty. Obviously, you know all the concerns with guys that are that tall. They have trouble repeating. I think he's a mid-rotation arm, but he commands the ball well, has a nice fastball, above-average changeup, probably average curveball. Good ballpark in Seattle, so he could probably be a pop-up guy. Andrew Moore is a backhand guy with four average offerings. It's a lot of speed guys here. Luis Liberto, Braden Bishop, probably fourth outfielder guys with speed first. It gets thin pretty quick out here. The aforementioned Tony Zeke that you mentioned is a nice setup guy. Brandon Miller is my favorite starting pitching prospect. 51-7 strikeout to walk ratio. Coming out of college, out of a small school in Florida. Really plus command, has a good feel for pitching. I think he sneaks his way into a major league rotation for a lot of years. And you can get him for absolutely nothing. And the upside's not that high. But I think the floor is. So in a really deep league like you're in, he might be a guy that you could grab at the back end of a draft or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Brandon Miller is a nice little righty there, 6'4", 210. That's about it, though, man. System Jerry DePoto is wheeling and dealing. I don't know. Who knows if some of these prospects will be traded by the time this goes up. But, they lost Alex Jackson this year. Couple really deep sleepers, David Greer, Dearis Moses, Nick Zamorelli, all little just way far down. Nick Wells is a nice left-handed arm. Greifer, Andrade, and Brian Hernandez were big bonus guys. They're just athletic guys that have yet to put it together. Christopher Torres is a really good defensive first shortstop, but you never know. He could all of a sudden start hitting. There's some diamonds if you know where to look here, but it's Dylan Overton, who they just acquired from the A's. I think he's a good back end guy, and in this park, in this situation, he could be valuable. Been similar situation as Oakland. He's a guy that throws low 90s. He's a really good college pitcher at OU. Injuries have kind of set him down. He's not the 94, 95 guy like he was in college. Now he's a 91, 92 with a good feel and good changeup, good breaking ball. So he's a guy worth gambling on, but the system's okay. It's not great, but there's a lot of sneaky impact guys that we touched on earlier, so don't ignore it.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. You can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTompFWFB. Reach me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. Please give the show a rate and review, and if you give us a review of a 5-star variety, that will get you into a listener league or be eligible for other prizes later on in the off season. I think we're getting pretty close to filling listener league number one. So I think
good.
Yeah, and I'm going to be a part of that one as well. maybe another guy or two for Runs of Fantasy Benefits.
Yeah, I'll do one of them. I'll do one of them.
You know, and I'm even thinking about maybe doing like a pay league where, because this, we have enough staff now at Friends of Fantasy Benefits where we could potentially do almost have enough for a full league ourselves and supplement it with any listeners that want in on that. So if you're interested in something like that, hit me up on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. You wouldn't have to give us a 5-star review because you're paying to be, you know, you're paying an entry fee.
Yeah.
You
can put some jelly beans down like Chuck likes to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. Because like Chuck's like, I don't play unless there's jelly beans involved. I play to win. I don't care what the stakes are. Except for one of my dynasty leagues, that the one I keep mentioning, which I've been rebuilding virtually the entire time I've had it. So,
yeah, that's fun, though. I like doing that.
It's interesting. It's a new experience for me. I've never done it before. You know, one of the guys in the league who's become a pretty big listener of this podcast, especially the Prospect Minutes, has been giving me shit because I sold Josh Donaldson, I think, 2 years ago or something like that.
Billy Bean?
Yeah, and got a Billy Bean-esque return. So,
hey, I'll take Brito.
Yeah, I got Devers out of it. I think I got someone else out of it. But I also gave up, you know, the first overall pick, which ended up being Brendan Rodgers that year. And
okay, you lost.
I fucked up, but whatever, it happens.
See, hey, it's all good, man.
Even analysts make mistakes.
Sure.
But yeah, that's going to wrap us up. For Matt and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.